Hi, I'm Skating PJ, and this is Let's Talk About It, the Skate Ontario podcast, where we're going to get up close and personal with members of our skating family who have a connection to Ontario. So, let's talk about it. Hi, everybody. At Skating PJ here, thrilled to be welcoming on the Let's Talk About It podcast, Caitlin Osmond, world champion, Olympic medalist, just all around nice guy. How are you, Caitlin?
Good. How are you?
I am well. So what I want to talk to you about today, you have lots of experience about Ontario, and our Let's Talk About It Skate Ontario podcast always points back to Ontario. So I know that you've already been doing a couple of seminars in Ontario. So one of the things I want to talk about is, what do seminars do for skaters?
Well, seminars, for one, are just a great day to break the monotony of your actual training. And that was why I loved them growing up, was that I got to go to, usually I had to travel for them, being in Newfoundland. So I had to travel to the next town over, which is St. John's. And it would be a group of five of us that would go for the weekend. And we just have a great time, of course, also learn from people. But it was a chance that we got to hang out with friends, and then we got to learn from some pretty cool people. Like, one of the biggest ones I know of is Brian Arthur came with Ben
Ferreira. Brian who?
Yeah, right? When I was 5 years
old, Ferreira,
I had no clue.
Ben Ferreira, former Canadian champion. Yep. Ben Ferreira, former Canadian champion, all around nice guy. So they came to Newfoundland?
They came to Newfoundland. And that's like, it was one of my later seminars that I did, but I think that's the one that stuck out to me the most as a kid, because I think I was finally making real memories by then. and I just remember there was a break during some of the sessions, and Ben stayed on with Brian, and Brian was helping him learn a quad toe, or like, wow, fix his quad toe, something like that. So I was just standing there like watching, and I was like, oh, this looks pretty cool.
So I want you to take me back to, you You alluded to me about a story when you were in kindergarten and career day, because I want people to understand your roots in skating go way back.
Yeah, well, I started skating when I was two, so it's really all I know. And my sister started skating when she was three, and she's 3 years older than me. So I think I was practically born in a rink at this point. But yeah, for career day in kindergarten, we had to show up dressed as the career that we wanted to be. I showed up in my little yellow figure skating dress with my little red ribbon that I got at something. And I said that I want to be a figure skater.
And here you are today. And it worked out.
Yeah, still here. Wearing yellow. Kind of.
I'm not wearing yellow. I'm wearing gray with a scarf that's supposed to make me look dressed up, but honestly, you can't really see it. But anyway, that's a story for a different day. And what people maybe also don't understand is that the relationships in skating go way back. So I remember talking to you. You may have been a brand new senior at that time. I don't think you were even Canadian champion yet. And we were at a Skate Canada high performance camp. And I'm very enthusiastic about, things like social media and recording things and all the rest of it. But I'm certainly not very talented where any of this stuff is concerned. And I remember trying to get some good lighting on you. And you finally, in your calm and lovely and gentle way, said, you know, maybe we need to turn off some lights. So you were also a lighting designer back in those days.
Back in the day. I wish I had back fixed my day. Lighting today. It's only so much better, but there's only so much you can do in a hotel room.
That is actually true. So let's go back to the education piece, because I want to talk about, sort of in broader terms, about self-expression. Of course, skating has lots of opportunities for self-expression. You're now officially tired skater. So I want to know about self-expression and the kinds of lessons that you're trying to deliver in a seminar or webinar kind of setting.
When I teach my seminars, of course, there is the educational side of the technique of skating. But one of the things that I love to incorporate at the end of it is usually for as much time as people will give me, depending on which schedule. If I have free rein, it's usually about 45 to an hour of this, but I do creative movement, which you get to see very different versions of, because you see the people who love performing and those people who don't.
right.
Or you find like the differences in in people and just like what will draw out their attitudes, I guess, a bit more. So for me, when I start that, I usually start with some just exercises of different ideas of things that you can do for movement, different varieties of ways to movement, remembering that on the ice you can still walk on your toes or on your heels or up in the air. And then I like to do one where you're literally rolling on the ice. And that one usually breaks people out of their shell more than anything. The minute you get to, well, because often rules in skating now are a little bit more lenient with being able to do these knee slides and belly slides and all these other movements on the ice, but that wasn't the case for so long. So when you're so focused and so tired of thinking of all the technique, letting people just
Yep.
say, I need you to do multiple different movements across the ice right now, but you're not allowed to actually be on your feet. So it's
Oh,
like different
wow.
challenges like that. So then they roll around on the ice, they and you see a lot more of their personalities coming out that way. So then once they're all goofy up like that, then I usually give them a chance to keep going with different challenges, but then they have stuff to do with partners because people usually like sometimes like being with a partner because they'll feel more comfortable.
Yep.
Or just some freestyle stuff. And then sometimes I also have a dance choreographed, and I was like, okay, I'll teach you the choreography, but I'm not going to add really any arms. Like, I want to see your personality come out in that movement.
You know, it's fascinating what you're talking about because I imagine that some of what you're doing and how you're having to teach things depends on the age of the participants. So that perhaps younger children are less inhibited. Maybe, you know, that preteen to teenager is more inhibited. So are there adaptations that you're making based on your audience?
Yeah, well, with the younger crew, you got to, they more just want to dance and have fun at this point. I try to bring in the educational side of it more with them, to teach them the types of movement that you can do. But then I let them have a freestyle and then hope that some of the things we talked about got translated into it. Whereas with the older ones, they know the technique, they know the movements they can do. Sometimes they need little reminders. But for them, that's when you can see the insecurities come out a lot more. It's very clear when I go to a club where the skaters are very close with each other, because then they really have no inhibitions. They're like, oh, these are just all my friends. I can act as stupid as I want right now. Whereas when I go to other seminars, you can see that that's not always the case. So then I try to make them feel more comfortable in some way or another, or I just start dancing myself and people realize how ridiculous I look. So
So here's a question for you, sort of in a broad kind of scope. So as a skater, I was one of those who didn't like to perform. You know, you put me in a group number for a carnival, yeah, I'm all over it. Put me by myself, and with Mrs. Burka's Theater on Ice, I still have PTSD as a result of it. But I want to know what part perfectionism plays in either enhancing or inhibiting movement from your experience. Either
perfectionism
as a
comes
teacher or
later.
yourself. Pardon?
I always say perfectionism comes later. You got to be
Okay.
very not perfect first. And I do that. I'm teaching a lot of choreography right now. Love to be doing more. So if you're looking for a choreographer, hello. I know there's no shortage of them in Ontario, but you can always need more.
Exactly.
I find with choreography, I come in with very little to nothing prepared when I'm about to work with a skater. I have their music, that's about
Okay.
it. Their music and their element list. And when I'm working with them, I like it that way because I get to choreograph it to the skater, because especially when I don't know the skater ahead of time, I like to choreograph it to them. And I'll add in a lot of just things, and it's things that we're figuring out together.
Okay.
But then I tell them not to worry about it if they make a mistake, because sometimes the mistakes look really cool. Lance and I always joked about that, because Lance was my choreographer forever.
Lance
And
Vipont. Yep.
we worked together in that kind of way all the time. And he would choreograph something, and I would probably fall trying to figure it out. And then the way I would fall, he's like, oh, that was actually really cool how you moved that way. Or sometimes something I feel is natural won't feel natural to someone else, and they'll step a different way. And I was like, oh, that actually looked a lot better than what I could have done, or what I could have thought of in that moment. So working with the skater in that way and not worrying about making it look perfect, I'm like, don't worry about the steps right now. And I'm like, we'll clean up what needs to be cleaned up. I'm like, I'm probably going to put in way more than it's going to stay, and I'm going to have to take things out. So I'm like,
Yep.
I just want it to look funny and goofy, and we'll figure it out from there. It's when the choreography is set and the competition season is started and the jumps are finalized that that's when you have to look at the more perfectionism side of it.
Okay, so taking into account that you meet Skater X, okay, and you're going to do
Yes.
choreography of a program. Let's pick novice level just for fun.
Okay.
So you've got let's say a 12-year-old, 14-year-old, something like that kind of age. How do you know as a choreographer that you are actually hitting the mark where that skater is in their own mind? I mean, I remember watching skaters at different times over my long sort of writing career, watching skaters, and you know when you're watching a program, it looks like this is one of those my mother's making me programs. This is not something in which the skater looks at all comfortable with the movement. So how are you able to balance getting to know that person that fast, getting the technical elements figured out, and weaving movement in such a way as to express the music?
Sometimes easier said than done. There are some skaters that I get to work with, especially at the novice level, when their turn knowledge and their skating knowledge is already really strong. So if I say do this, do that, do this, they know exactly what I'm saying, which makes it tremendously easier to add things in and be the skater that they want to be. Coming in essentially unprepared also helps with that because it helps the skater's personality come out. When I say sometimes easier said than done, sometimes skaters are really receptive and they want to have a lot of involvement in their choreography. For example, when I say like, I want your arm to go this way, and they're like, you know what, but I think I can move it the other way and it would look really cool. And I was like, sure. I'm like, if you feel like doing that, go right ahead. And I'm probably not going to tell someone to not do something if they wanted to do it, unless it really didn't work. And then I will subtly guide them in a different direction. But often when I start
Fair.
working with a choreographer, with a new skater, I will get them to show me different like feel movements and transition movements that we can put into a program. I want them to pick out their favorite ones, but then I'll also ask them to try ones that I want to see, just to see if maybe they're not confident with it, but it's good enough that it can get better. Or maybe they just hadn't tried it. Or maybe we can find a variation of it to make it look unique and cool. Same thing with jumps. And this was the biggest thing that I learned with my choreographers growing up, is that I had very set patterns into each of my jumps. And I had a very set order of elements that made me feel comfortable because I practiced them. I felt comfortable doing them that way. And I felt stronger doing them that way. And I would tell, and I've transferred that into doing my teaching choreography now. Well, I'll go to the skater. I'm like, you show me the entrance that you want to do into your axel or your triple sow, especially for the harder elements that you can't really shift your pattern as easily. And I
Yep.
was like, you tell me which way you practice it. I'm like, I'll give you transitions to get there, but the end game is you feel better going there. And for the most part, skaters respond to that really well. But there are the shy skaters that just look at me with blank face and they're like, I don't know, you tell me what to do. And
I'll
I
do
know, and
it.
I'm like, some people can choreograph, can perform that really, really well. I know it's harder for the choreographer to create something when the skater's not giving back.
There's no collaboration.
When there's no
Yeah, for sure.
collaboration. But of course,
Yep.
people can do it really well where they will perform choreography. But I find the danger in that is that there's no personality that comes out with it.
So do you think, so sometimes, people talk about, oh, such and such a storyline in a program. I think that for me, I think sometimes local music gets in the way, but I'm a literal person. So if you're talking about something and I'm hearing it vocally and you're not expressing that on the ice, that's difficult for me. I'm just talking about me. But that whole idea of a storyline, should it remain internal for skaters, or should they express it? Because I swear to you, sometimes people will express a storyline and I'll go, are we reading the same book? That's not what I feel at all. So where do you
Worlds a
sit
few
on that whole
times.
storyline? What's that?
I felt that way at Worlds a few times. I was watching and I was like, I know there's a story because they're acting something and it's very big and you can see that they're going through movements of a story. And then I'm sitting there and I was like, but I don't get it.
Intention. Like there's intention there, which I love. But does, so tell me about character-driven pieces. Like you've done a few in your day. I think about the Black Swan in particular. I mean, I just was completely captivated and drawn in. Like it was just, I felt like that was theater. I mean, you've done lots of programs that I've loved, but that one just jumps to mind. Of course, that was a very important program. How does storyline play into all of this?
It depends on what kind of storyline you're going for and what kind of skater you're working with.
Fair.
Sometimes for pieces like Black Swan, the story is well known. Same thing as I did Carmen one year,
Yep. Love
Cleopatra,
that program.
and La Boheme. And I find it really funny because every single time you choreograph those dramatic pieces, you die in the end. Someone tell me a dramatic piece of music where the main character does not die in the end. Romeo and Juliet, they die in the end.
Yeah.
So essentially, just assume that they're gonna die
Moulin
in the end.
Rouge.
Moulin
Yeah.
Rouge dies in the end.
Yeah, yeah.
just really depressing pieces of music. But they're so great and they're very known pieces, which makes telling the very big story of it a lot easier because
Okay.
most people watching skating is going to know ish the storyline. But at the same time, I probably didn't know most of the storylines growing up. So I always find storyline for me was internalized, so that I could portray the music more so than the actual story.
Okay.
But it gave me movements to think about that made sense. So when Lance and I worked together, we worked on building a random story that might be somewhat connected to the real story, but like a funnier version that I could laugh about. Like my EDIF-PF program, my whole storyline was that I was waiting for my rich businessman to come out of his office in the day, and I was sitting across the road at the cafe. And that was my starting
Oh.
position. I was waiting on the edge of my cafe table, waiting for my rich businessman to appear. And then I was always joking around with them, like, yay, we're going to be friends, or no, I'm going to run away. And then at the end, I was like, ta-da, and I'm sitting on your lap. So there was always random little storylines that I had going throughout my whole program. And it just helped with the way I was moving for me to
Yep.
make sense. Like my ending position for my EDIF-PF program probably wouldn't have made sense if I didn't think that I was like trying to sit on someone's lap without falling over because my person's invisible. I don't know. Same thing with my starting position. It was a little quirky of a starting position, and everyone said I always looked really bored. And I was like, well, that was because that was the point.
Of
I was
course.
bored waiting for my businessman. So it was always stories like that. And then Black Swan, because it was the same year. Black Swan, I love the story of Black Swan, especially from the film with Natalie Portman. I like the confusion of needing to be perfect, but then not wanting to be perfect. And I felt like I could relate to that really, really well in my career, especially that late in my career. So my psychologist and I actually sat down and we created my story to the swans. and the two
Cool.
sides of the swans. And she voice recorded it in like this hypnosis style voice. And whenever I started to feel like it got robotic, I just listened to that again, and I reminded myself of like where I wanted it to go. So that one, it
You
was a
know, see,
really big like internal piece.
yeah, for sure. So, you bring up the word where you wanted to go. We'll talk about the journey a little bit. I know that when you finish skating, when you finish competing, not when you finish skating, you have turned your attention to lots of other creative avenues. You and I, talked about your you started to become educated as a broadcaster. You've done lots of great commentary for Skate Canada on their live stream feed. And I'm sure you still did some photography, if I'm not mistaken, didn't you? You should have.
Maybe a little bit, mostly on my
A
phone now,
little
not
bit.
so much with my camera anymore, but I like
Listen,
to bring
with your
my camera
phone,
out. Yeah.
You can pretty much do anything anyway. I
Oh,
mean,
honestly, I did have my
let's
camera out when I worked at the Edmonton Zoo, and it was the most fun I ever had. I got to take pictures of animals all day, and then create memes out of them. So that
So let's
was
talk
fun.
about that. I want to talk about sort of sort of in our remaining few minutes, creativity in that broader sense. So you mentioned the zoo. I mean, you and I've kept in touch ever since you moved back to Alberta. Talk to me about the zoo. What I mean, I know you loved it. What was that all about?
It was just such a fun position. It was a summer student position because I just moved back to Edmonton. It was still kind of in the midst of COVID, so there wasn't a lot of ice time that I could coach on. And I just needed something. So I got a job at the Edmonton Zoo, and it was a communications job. So essentially, my job involved me taking photos of the animals and interviewing the zookeepers about the animals or about their positions at the zoo, walking them into being a zookeeper. And I just got to hear so many people's stories, or even just stories of animals, and also learn about what zoos are trying to do, because I was always in the mentality is like, oh my goodness, they're caging all the animals, even though I love them and I really want to go visit them. So I had always like conflicting feelings about zoos. But then they taught me like the conservation efforts of zoos and which ones to feel good going to because they participate in these conservation efforts. And how zoos are changing to not being like fully enclosed, but having natural enclosures. Like I learned that a lemur will never cross 4 feet of water. So as long as you have their little sanctuary with a moat of 4 feet of water, they won't leave it.
Interesting.
Things I never would have known if I didn't work at a zoo, probably. And then meerkats. I love meerkats. They were like my pride and joy of photography because they just stood there all cute and adorable. And I guess I went and saw them so many times because they were pretty much right next to my office that my phone started telling me when I left my house, they're like, well, you're 20 minutes from the meerkat exhibit. And I was like, I know, I'm so excited.
So I
So
get
yeah.
my point in asking you to share that is to sort of demonstrate to people out there. We probably have some teenagers listening. We've got parents listening. We've got people of all ages and skating ability or skating interest. Your life does not end because you stop competing. If you are a creative person, there are other outlets. So, by the way, what was your favorite animal? Was it the meerkats?
Oh, there's so many. The meerkats are really cool. I became really good friends with a camel.
As one does.
Yes, because he was hand raised by four of the zookeepers because his mother abandoned him. So he was so cute,
Oh.
and he loved people. So the camel was one of my favorites, and well, you can't not love red pandas.
Of course.
Yeah,
Of course.
they're adorable.
I'm a big fan. Big fan. So let's talk a little bit about sort of another transition that you've made. You have elected to not only speak about things as you do in commentary, and in so many other ways, but you're now kind of looking at writing. What about writing attracts you?
The biggest thing that I love about either choreography or writing or even broadcasting is the ability to tell a story.
Okay.
For me, I actually changed my minor in school right now to creative writing just because I showed up to one creative nonfiction class and I was like, this is like really fun.
I
And we
agree.
sat down and we got to work with other people. We got to like bounce ideas off each other. And I got to hear how other people thought and how they felt they could express things. And I was like, oh, I wouldn't have thought of going in that direction, or I wouldn't have described it this way. Like one of my friends that I've met, one of my classes, he is a biology major, and we had a challenge in our class to be able to write about something, but it be kind of like an essay collage, so all the paragraphs didn't necessarily match with each other, but in the end it created a story.
Wow.
That was an extremely hard challenge for me. I can't guarantee I did it well. But they connected like his dad with a honeybee, or his grandpa as a turtle, and it was really interesting to see where he went. And I was like, how do you know so much knowledge about these things? And he's like, well, I'm a biology major. And I was like, makes sense.
Okay, fair.
So that's kind of what I feel like when I'm writing, is that I'm able to get things out in my head that I don't necessarily know how to verbalize. Same thing with I like to play around on social media with reels and videos, or TikTok, and it's my way of just saying like, this is what I'm doing. I'm like, I'm a creative person, I'm a performer. I'm like, sometimes I don't want to go to the gym and just do it for myself because that doesn't motivate me. But performing at the gym does. like to an
So the common
extent.
denom
But yeah.
no, go ahead. I've got a question about the common denominator, because
Yeah.
you offer up your creativity for public consumption. So the thread between figure skating performing and writing, creative writing, to me are the same, because they're not kept just for you inside, the confines of four walls of an arena. I mean, that's maybe where it gets developed. Same with your writing. It gets developed at your desk or at your computer. But in truth, it's for public consumption.
Yeah.
Does that feel stressful as you're creating it, or is that a motivation?
Yes and no. Like some things I'm very motivated for. When it comes to just creating funny videos, that does motivate me. I think it's funny. But sometimes I want to talk about topics that might not sit with some people.
Okay.
I talked a lot about mental health side of things during COVID, when people were locked away in their in their apartments, and I actually got a lot of I lost a lot of followers at the same time.
Really?
I went from having close to 100,000 followers, and now I'm down to 80. And when I first started talking about my mental health side of things, it dropped significantly. And I would get some responses from people that would be like, oh, but you're an Olympic champion, it's easy to say that. Or like, oh, you did so and so, so like, how are you even saying this? Like, if you don't feel comfortable in your body, well, you did it before, you're young enough, do it again. And I'm like, okay, but that's not where I am, and it's not what it makes me feel better right now. I'm like, right now, that puts me in a lot of stress. I'm like, I don't have enough time to put me in that stress. Whereas at the same time, when I was posting about these things, I was getting messages from people that I actually talked to pretty consistently afterwards, willing to tell me their story and willingness to open up about it. And for me, that made it worth it. So when I'm writing now, or when I'm wanting to talk about something that might have adverse effects and isn't just easy go lucky, happy go lucky all the time. It's nerve-wracking and it's a little bit adrenaline filling.
Okay.
Because I don't know what it's going to sound like or how it's going to be received. But I often felt that same way choreographing a program at the beginning of the year, or choreographic program for someone else. I'm like, oh, is this going to be good enough for them? Or is this going to be something that they can be proud of? Or is it something that was too hard? And when I come back to see it later on, it looks like a whole new program that I didn't choreograph.
Well, there's that possibility too. It takes on a life of its own, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, who knows? But it's fun to not let it keep stirring in my head.
Yep, I totally get that. And also I found as a writer, in finding my voice, if you want to call it that, I started writing what I wanted to read. So rather than Trying to anticipate what you might want to read or what that person might want to read or whatever, which I felt might, in fact, dilute my message. I felt like what I wanted to do was I wanted to write something that down the road I would be happy to read. Not that I'd written it, but just that I would be happy to read. So you're not going to be, the minute you try and chase the followers, you're going to lose them anyway. Because it becomes disingenuous. So, if there were three things that you could say are guiding principles for you in your creative journey, what would they be?
The first thing is to find my own voice, because in skating and in sport, everything I've said to media or like sitting in the kiss and cry, all of it's curated. All of it was pre-planned. I knew what my message was before I got into the competition. Like it was scripted. And I did a talk at a sport journalism class and they're like, what are the best questions to ask? And I'm like, ask whatever you want because they're going to give you the same answer no matter what.
Although there are tricks about that, by the way.
There are tricks about it. I'm like, one, catch them off guard. Don't ask them the same question.
Exactly. That's my point.
Yeah.
It's one of my best tricks is that you say, what about that red thing over there? Oh, and by the way, and they're like, and you get honest answers.
Yeah,
But you
you
have
have
to
to trip
be
them up.
strategic. Yeah, trip them up. That's rude, but yeah.
And in the point of a competition, if you want to get like to the nitty gritty of something, they're not going to answer.
You know what,
Unless they want to.
Caitlin? You and I recorded a podcast in a car years ago. It was at Escape Canada. You were recovering from injury and you had a real belly flop in the short program. You'd really hurt yourself. So you continued the free. I don't know if you remember this at all.
Oh,
And
I remember.
yeah, I went toe to toe with a certain journalist in the US who was being a bit of a jerk. But anyway, story for a different day because the construction of that program was beautiful. The execution on the day was not great. You had four or five falls in it. And I kept thinking to myself, why isn't she just doing doubles? Like, why isn't she just doing like this? Why is she doing this to herself? And it was one of my questions in the podcast recording that I did with you, which was, tell me why. And I loved your answer. If I didn't love you before, I loved you starting from then because you said, well, I wouldn't have been happy with myself if I hadn't at least tried. At least this way, I tried. And I thought, my goodness, you are a champ, young lady, because that's exactly right. You decided to run your own race for good or for bad. And I felt it was a real moment of honesty. So I was able to trick you into that. God bless you.
No, it's actually funny. I still use that one when I have to do a talk anywhere. That is one of my most memorable performances, and
Yep.
memorable moments, which is hilarious because it's my worst competitive moment probably in my entire life. One of the most painful. I don't suggest falling into the middle splits if you can't do them. Very bad
Yeah, I
idea.
get that. Uh-huh.
But I still use that as one of my examples because for me, I couldn't withdraw because I had just gotten back from breaking my leg and missing an entire year. I had withdrawn from Escape Canada before because I tore my hamstring after the short program. And for me, I needed to get through that free program for myself. My body probably didn't like it, but I needed to.
Yep.
And I learned very quickly into that free program that I was strong enough to jump and rotate. My body wasn't healthy enough to land.
Got it.
So I tried, and it was the first time my hair has ever fallen out in competition. My tights ripped in the middle of the event. I did land my triple loop, which was really a bonus for me because it was one of the first competitions I landed triple loop, and I stepped forward and fell. And I finally singled my last axel. I finally gave up on the last axel. I was like, I quit. I'm not jumping this one. And I got off the ice, and Ravi looked at me and he's like, are you okay? And I was like, you know what? I think I am. And he's like, I'm proud of you for trying everything in that program. I'm like, I need it too for me. And then to top it off, I got picked for the random doping test. And I was like, thanks.
What are the odds?
I was like, it didn't work if I was taking anything. Like, really?
Yeah. All things considered. Listen, you have been so generous with your time here today. I want you to give me one last bit of advice for anybody out there who's listening who wants to express themselves creatively in any way. Do you have a piece of advice for them?
Don't limit yourself to one form of creativity. Try it in different ways. I'm not a creative person. I don't know how to draw a stick man. But for me, writing means a lot to me, and piecing things together means a lot to me. So yeah, some people are creative with videos, some people are creative with music. But I'm like, don't limit yourself to just one because you don't know. And if you're bad at it, who cares?
Exactly. Who cares indeed? Caitlin Osmond, one last thing. If people want to get a hold of you, how do they do that?
Typically my Instagram, it's my most popular thing. And it's at Kate Kiss. So KAETKISS.
You heard it here first on Let's Talk About It. Caitlin Osmond, thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Let's Talk About It, the Skate Ontario podcast. Don't forget to follow us on social media. I'm at Skating PJ. Until next time, bye for now.